You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, you will be well aware that phase two of the government business partnership, it's a transformative initiative aimed at accelerating South Africa's path towards a sustainable economic growth dynamic, job creation and infrastructure development, has now been announced overnight. Well, what does it mean? It builds on the momentum of phase one, I'm told, which it says made significant strides in areas like energy, transport and crime reduction. So where to from here? Joining us now, Martin Kingston from Business for South Africa. And Martin, firstly then, how will phase two of this specifically benefit the country, and I guess in terms of growth and job creation?
Well, phase two of the partnership is going to build on the successes and the progress that we made during phase one, covering the three areas that you're familiar with of energy, transport and logistics, and crime and corruption. And we saw real progress during the first phase, the elimination of load shedding. We hope it'll be permanently the implementation of many structural reforms, both in energy as well as in transport and logistics, enabling the private sector to play a much more significant role, and putting in place the apparatus, the structure for dealing with crime and corruption, particularly capacitating the NPA. Phase two is about leveraging that capacity, putting in place additional resources, both for business as well as for government, with the explicit intention of addressing some of the very fundamental challenges that we still have in energy. We've got to construct 1,000 kilometers of new transmission lines over the next year. We need to accelerate private sector investment in generation capacity. We need to fast-track procurement through Bid Window 7. We need to strengthen the regulator, strengthen NERSA. In the case of transport and logistics, I think we're all very well aware of the fact that Transnet is struggling, despite the fact that significant changes have taken place, both at the level of the executive management and with the oversight of the board chaired by Andile Sanlu. But rail capacity needs to be significantly increased. At the moment, the mining industry is hemorrhaging as a consequence, and not just the mining industry, of the constraints both on the rail and port. Expediting the network statement, and again, as I said, ensuring the participation of the private sector. And then finally, in the case of crime and corruption, you know, what we're clear about is we need to remove South Africa from the FATF grey list. That will result in an improvement in our credit rating, a reduction in our cost of borrowing, an acceleration of investment in the country, and of course, an increase in confidence levels. And all of that feeds through, and I'm sure you'll come to this, to the ability to create sustainable jobs. That's the biggest single challenge that we have as a country, with a particular focus, and we raised this yesterday at the launch of phase two on our youth, where we're aiming to create an additional 400,000 employment opportunities for youth by the end of 2025.
Has the dynamic changed in any way between the principal parties, given that we now have a coalition or a government of national unity?
Yeah, I think it actually has. It's improved. Not that we didn't make good progress during the sixth administration. It was the sixth administration that commenced the work of Operation Vulindlela that we're leveraging here. It was the sixth administration where we assembled the structures that we're talking about, and we enjoyed very significant support. But there's a new energy, Jeremy, I have to say, a new positivity, and everybody is fully committed to the structural reform that is necessary, to the role and participation of the private sector, to harnessing all resources wherever they are and subject matter experts, to ensure that we can drive this change as quickly as possible. I think there's an awareness not only of the challenges that we face, but of the opportunity that we can seize if we actually, as a country, collaborate effectively and get our acts together. And that was detectable not only yesterday at the launch of phase two, where the president and many of his ministers were present, but at the first formal engagement we had about 6 weeks ago between government and indeed the private sector, where there was very significant representation from the GNU. And as I said, that sort of energy was palpable.
How do you make sure from both sides that one side isn't co-opted and the other side isn't capitulating?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I mean, we do need to make sure that we stay within our lane as the private sector. That's particularly the case with respect to crime and corruption. We need to respect the independence of the criminal justice cluster, but we need to be able to cooperate with them and make available skills and capabilities. So transparency, I think the first point is the first key to that, holding ourselves collectively as well as individually to account. The second is that we're not saying that we shouldn't criticize one another constructively behind closed doors and even in the public domain. But really what we need to do is promote the potential of the country and indeed the collaborative aspect of the partnership. And I think that that's the way in which we do hold one another to account, by virtue of the fact that we're now creating very clear, definable deliverables in the context of critical paths for each of those three areas. We're looking at the possibility of adding additional areas, Jeremy, but we won't do so to the detriment of the three focus areas currently. And if we fail to meet the targets, then we need to be able to explain clearly and honestly why that's the case and what we're going to do to remediate the situation. So I do think that there is an acknowledgement that we need to respect one another's role in both society and in the country, but that in the context of economic growth, we can only do so by harnessing our respective skills and capabilities. In government's case, the implementation of structural reform. In the case of the private sector, obviously investment is the biggest single determinant of that, based upon the appropriate environment being in place.
And in that respect, Martin, how do you then deal with conflict to make sure that both sides get a strong and robust solution and that whatever you come up with is not simply a watered-down compromise?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question, of course, because the risk that we run when you have many people in the room is that you do sort of default to the lowest common denominator. We can't do that. We absolutely know what is required in terms of the architecture to underpin the type of investment environment that will spur the growth that is required. And therefore, I think that the private sector, although it is mindful of the constraints on government, is going to be very single-minded about creating the right environment, not just, by the way, so that they can secure appropriate returns for their shareholders, but so that they can actually secure returns for their stakeholders, which is the country at large. So in that regard, I think that we have aligned objectives with the government, but we need to be able to honestly speak to one another to ensure that we don't dilute, as you said, those overall objectives and standards that are required.
Is there concern within this grouping about forces gathering on the left who would be vehemently opposed to what you're doing?
Well, we've seen that already. We saw that for the first year. We celebrated the first year about 2 months ago. Jeremy, there will always be detractors, and we need to take them in our stride. The approach of, sort of, if you like, a sort of populist mentality, which seeks to undermine the progress that we're making, will always be present. But I have to say, it doesn't interfere at all with our commitment as business, nor, I believe, in the context of the resolve of government, certainly the GNU, to the partnership.
Do you believe that you have full buy-in from all business in South Africa, or are you still having to win over naysayers and detractors?
It's actually very interesting, because I think that we have, for the most part, absolute unconditional support from business, large and small, across all sectors, formal and informal. They recognize that if we don't address the sort of challenges that we've identified, the three areas that we're focusing on at the moment, but there are others, such as, for example, the water crisis that is emerging, such as the role of municipalities, which is primarily a political issue, that we're not going to be able to achieve, you know, the potential for the private sector. So, no, I've found very few naysayers within business. More importantly, we've seen that the CEOs, we've had over 140 that have now signed the pledge, and I think that we'll see more in the coming days and weeks, are getting personally involved. They're not just committing their companies, their sector, and the private sector, but they're rolling up their sleeves. We've got CEO sponsors for each of the work streams. As you know, we've just brought on another three, Simon Baloy from Sasol, Mary Vilakazi from First Round, and Fani Titi from Investec, who are prepared to supplement and complement the work that's already been done by the CEOs who've been leading that work for the past 12 months. I think that there is a great deal of goodwill that we're able to harness, and as I said, very little by way of detractors within the private sector.
Martin Kingston, thank you very much indeed.